we get to make wines that are going to be different every single year because of what Mother Nature throws at us.
You're really in touch with the seasons.
This is farming. Where this all starts is agriculture.
Wine is both a representation of its place and a representation of its time.
We can't control Mother Nature.
To make really fine wine, you need to do it in the old traditional way.
It was a lot funkier back then than it is now.
We're in a creative kind of business, and so this is what makes it fun.
I really love what I do. I'm happiest, I think, when I'm in the vineyard.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle and welcome to podcast number 161.
And this week we talk to winemaker Christopher Tynan of Cliff Lady Vineyards in Napa Valley. What makes a person decide to become a winemaker? Besides the obvious reasons. Is it food business connections? Maybe a medical background? Or a farming life? Winemakers come from all different types of backgrounds, as you've heard from many of our podcasts. And Christopher Tynan of Cliff Lady Vineyards is no different. But that's why we love to have the winemakers tell their stories. And this one is Chris's. I'm here with Christopher Tynan of Cliff Lady Winery. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me here today. And I had to really get that name right because it's a simple spelling, but it's a pronunciation that some people I don't think would have expected, would they have?
Exactly. And it's a question we get often here. And Cliff Lady, the owner, is just a wonderful owner. And he's from Canada. And that's how they pronounce it there. And that's what we go with here. So,
see, that explains a lot right there. What part of Canada is he from?
He's from up in Edmonton. Him and his brother own one of the largest construction companies in North America called Ledcor. And when Cliff decided that he had had enough of the construction business, he decided to look for something a little more fun and exciting to do. And he has always loved wine ever since he was a kid. He had made wine in his basement of his house with his mother. And when he first time he came out to Napa, he just fell in love with it. And during his adulthood, he had loved the wines of Bordeaux. And he imagined, you know, building something great in Napa. Making the wines similar to the wines from Bordeaux, so Cabernet-based wines, and found this place in Stag's Leap District and fell in love with it, and 13, 14 years later, here we are in this beautiful winery, and I'm lucky enough to make the wines here, so it's a good spot to be.
It's a great spot. This winery is beautiful. And interesting, he was making wine with his mom, because you usually hear that with your dad. You know, a lot of this is, of course, we want to talk about you and where you came from.
Absolutely. Well, I was born in New York, but I grew up in Houston, Texas, and majored in English in college. So you can imagine I was pretty much unemployable after school. I didn't want to go into law school or go back and teach English. So I ended up in all places of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and ended up waiting tables at a restaurant there, at a nice restaurant. And long story short, ended up running the restaurant, falling in love with the wine that I was buying for the restaurant more than actual restaurant business, and just decided this passion was big enough to go and move to Napa, and didn't know anyone, didn't know where to start. But I started taking classes at the local Napa Valley College here, the little JC, and started working some internships. My first internship at Cane, and then on to Blanquier, and I was fortunate enough to land my third harvest at Colgan Cellars. And they ended up hiring me on as their assistant winemaker, and I was there for 5 years. In 2012, I started here at Cliff Lady as full-time winemaker as well.
That's a pretty good background.
Yeah, I worked my butt off. Going through those 12 years pretty quickly, but it was a lot of hard work, a lot of school of hard knocks. There was a time where I thought, well, should I go back to UC Davis? Should I go back and get a master's in viticulture and enology? And when I was at Colgan, I felt like I was learning more there than I could ever learn at a school. So that was my decision to stay there and kind of consider that more of my apprenticeship as opposed to a formal degree. So I'm still just an English major, which I'm very proud of.
It just occurred to me, there's really nothing in the way of a true apprenticeship in wine. There was plenty of internships, but apprenticeship in the most proper form, I can't think I've ever seen anybody being in that particular title.
Correct. Yeah, and it was more of what my terminology for was it. You know, you see winemakers across the valley, and each one of them has their own path. There's lots of great schools now, and it's not just UC Davis. And you see people come from all different backgrounds, and a lot of English majors too. but yeah, I really don't think there's one path, and I think each path has its benefits and its negatives. And certainly for me, tasting great wines was, you know, it's because I didn't go to Davis, I made a real big effort to start tasting some of the great wines of the world and consider those some of my textbooks. That's how I rationalized my wine spending and built a really great cellar and drank those wines. Started collecting great old wines from California, and of course all the wines from Burgundy and Bordeaux and the Northern Rhone and Southern Rhone as well. It's my big passion.
You may ask how many bottles you have in your cellar approximately?
Well, gosh, how many? If I would have kept everything that I bought, I would have a lots more. But I just keep a little small little 500 bottle cellar at my house, which is completely full. But I don't buy wines to resell them. I buy them to drink them. So, and I try to buy enough that I don't. I can watch them age over time and not drink them and have to buy more. And so I can lay stuff down with proper storage and that. But I also buy lots of stuff at auction and try to find good wines. And if I find something I really like, I'll try to buy more of it so I can watch it age and hand it down one day if I can.
Well, it's a lot more fun to be able to drink at the end, isn't it? I mean, you know, I guess if you could make a good money off of a Burgundy or a Bordeaux or an old California wine, but in the end, how much fun is it just to share it with some friends?
That's how I feel. I think it's much more valuable. And especially if you have a wine novice and you can open up a great bottle of wine for them and, you know, change their life in a way that, you know, that can fall in love with wine and finally like get it. That's a great thing to have, because people have been very generous with their cellars with me over the year and opened wines for me that have, you know, got me deeper into this business and expanded my palate. And so anytime I can do that, I'm always love to do that.
Well, isn't it cool? Just to be able to turn somebody on to a different kind of wine or something new or something they've never tried, and to watch their reaction.
Absolutely. And one of my favorite things to do is to open up old California wines, especially for foreign interns who will never get a chance to taste most California wines, and especially not old California wines. And to have them taste Cabernets from Mayacamas or something from the 70s, Great Marthas, all these great wines, I can open those for them. I usually taste them blind, and when they taste it and they love it and they think, oh crap, California makes incredibly amazing wines that can last just as long as ours can. And I think they get a little worried when they first taste it, how good it is, and I show them what it is. And that's always fun too. So
you guys here in California have done something pretty amazing in a very short period of time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that gets lost sometimes in the romance of wine. I mean, it's hard to, you know, when you consider Burgundy's been making amazing wines for centuries and centuries, people have that in their mind. You know, the most of the California wine industry, in, you know, how we imagine it, has only been around for 30, 40, maybe you're stretching it 50 years in something that's considered modern. And I agree with you. I think the California has come so far, so fast, and been an innovator in grape growing and wine production that we really, it pains me when other people feel that California wine is less and that somehow inferior to other regions. But I think, you know, when you blind taste and you really go back, and obviously the styles are different, and I love France, I love Italy. It's not that it's better or worse. It's just different, and but it can equal par with our great vineyards and their great vineyards, I think.
California wine has earned respect. I mean, without a doubt, I think. I think that's a fair way to put it, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and I think I don't even I don't even like to pay anyone that would say differently any mind. I just think, oh, well, you just don't know yet. So I'm not going to argue with you. it's just a fact. And it's like arguing over whether the sky is blue. It's just fact. If you want to argue it, great. But I think it's just a fact that California wines are on par. The greatest wines in the world are, some of the greatest wines in the world are made here in California. And I don't feel any lesser because I make wine in California as opposed to anywhere else.
Yeah, I would definitely not argue with that. I think it's just a matter of winemakers, certainly, or I'm sorry, wine lovers being open-minded enough to try wines. I mean, God knows I've had my mind opened a million times by winemakers. But I love watching your enthusiasm. That's great because, you know, now you're part of this whole thing here in Napa and you've got some history there. That's, you know, so you're talking about being proud about being an English major, but as a winemaker, that's a pretty major statement because there aren't a lot of you.
Yes. Well, like I said, you know, when I went back and I first started my journey and got some of those aha moments with wines, going back and tasting some of the great wines of the world and tasting them over repeatedly, and you know, your palate changes over time. Some things you thought were great when you first started drinking wine, maybe you don't like them as much. And for me, it was about going and tasting the wines where multiple people have said wines from this vineyard, from this region are amazing. You need to try these, get to know them. And I'm kind of rambling here, but that was my goal. Because I did feel like a little bit of an outsider. I didn't have a UC Davis degree and I didn't grow up in a winemaking family. So I felt like I needed to make up some time and be better than everyone else palate-wise. That was my goal.
Well, don't feel bad. I know people who've been living here 29 years who say they're still outsiders. So we have some wine here to taste, which I'm awfully pleased that you brought that out. Can you tell me what we have here?
Absolutely. I opened up two bottles from the 2012 vintage, which was my first year as winemaker at Cliff Lady. The first is called Songbook on your left. And we are one of the three wineries that has the luxury or the access to fruit from David Abreu. David Abreu is a very famous vineyard manager here in Napa Valley. And I work with him very closely at Colgan. He farms all their vineyards. And he was actually the person that suggested Cliff give me a call when the winemaking position was open here. So I have a lot of respect for him. He's an amazing perfectionist in the vineyard. And so this wine, Songbook, is made from two different vineyards that we buy fruit from him. The Thorvilos Vineyard, which is just at the base of Howell Mountain. And it's planted on these beautiful tufa soils. They're just the volcanic, imagine volcanic ash. If you've ever seen a pumice stone, imagine that just ground to fine powder. And that's Cabernet. The heart and soul of the wine comes from Cabernet planted on that vineyard. We also get a little Merlot and Petit Verdot from that vineyard as well that go into this blend. And then the other vineyard is Madrona Ranch, which is on the western hills, alluvial hills in the town of St. Helena. It's on the western hills. And that's just both those vineyards are the two of the most beautiful vineyards in Napa Valley. The soil is perfect. The farming's perfect. And it just produces these wines of unique character and concentration. And there's such a precision in that fruit that I'm very lucky to make wine from those vineyards. The other wine is our 2012 Poetry. And this is our flagship wine for the winery. It is, when initially Cliff bought the property here in Sag's Leap, there was a vineyard across the hill called the Richard Chambers Vineyard, and we purchased that soon after the purchase of this vineyard. And it's a steep, rocky, terraced hillside vineyard. And Cliff hired David Abreu to replant that. And most of those vines are really starting to establish themselves right now. It's deep, rocky soil. It's fractured rhyolite as opposed to the tufa soils in David's Thorvilos Vineyard. The fractured rhyolite in the Poetry Vineyard is just so rocky. It's just shallow, shallow soil, and the vines are just getting established. They've been planted for at least about 10 years on average, And I feel like I'm hitting that vineyard just at the right time. I mean, it's just starting to come on and be really, 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 really good. The berries are so tiny and concentrated, and it makes a powerful, powerful Cabernet Sauvignon. And so this is our 2012 vintage.
I mean, it is really a number of combinations, not just the vintage on its own, in my opinion. You think that's fair to say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, initially, when a vineyard comes online, you get little glimpses of what it can be. But it's a little more variable because the roots haven't established themselves. It can be a little bit more flighty from vintage to vintage, depending on how that vintage comes out. But once each year when the vines get more and more established, there's less of that variation. So you can start to see it get to be exactly what it's going to be. And their vines are more established, so they're less likely to be prone to heat in the summertime or coolness in the spring. They're just more dialed in, and we can farm them a little more easily because we kind of know, well, this vine is only going to produce, you know, 2 tons an acre. This vine's going to produce 3 tons. Let's drop some fruit here. Let's work with it. And that just comes from working with the vines year and year and year.
In the end, when it comes to ratings, while I'm not the biggest fan of ratings, and we've got to try this wine here, isn't that the kind of thing that might be a big frustration because you're the one who's seeing the potential, but it's not there yet, and you don't get to defend that in any way, shape, or form?
No. Well, as a winemaker, you have a responsibility if you've given a certain expectation of quality and you don't back that up. Well, then that's the winemaker's fault. Maybe you got greedy and you tried to make more wine than you should have. And that's why we blend and blend and blend and blend and tweak blends and tweak blends until it's bottled, because we want people to have that perfect expression of that vineyard. And if we're if we've missed that, then we failed as winemakers. Now, critic scores, that's out of my hands. I can't control that. But if I know if a wine got a good score, it makes me happy. I'm happy that someone liked it as well. But if I know it's a great wine and people just need to wait and figure it out, then, well, then that's just what it is. But
Cheers.
Cheers, absolutely. We make a wine from the Tokalon Vineyard now. In 2012, we started. And that's a vineyard, if you thought you knew everything about wine that you in Napa Valley, you think, oh, the inferior wine comes from the valley floor and the best wine comes from up in the mountains. But somewhere, you know, 10,000 years ago, that Napa River just came along that little vineyard and deposited a soil that's just rocky and well-drained and is beautiful. And there might be 100 vineyards around it that are too close to the river, that just are too vigorous, that don't produce fruit, but just that little spot, it's kind of like a little tenderloin in the Napa Valley floor, where it, hot years, it just stays a little bit cooler, and cold years, it just stays a little bit warmer, and that well-drained rocky soil just makes these beautiful, very distinctive wines. And just that little tiny switch in the river that many thousands of years ago has created a wonderful spot for grapes. So, like you said, I totally agree with you. It's where you grow the fruit really, really matters. Yeah.
You were talking about being proud of being an English major. Do you write then? Is that?
No, I was a terrible. Well, I was good. I was a terrible creative writer. I mean, I took some poetry classes and. I know there's no evidence of anything I wrote then is terrible. But I actually started getting in more. I took a lot of criticism classes. I took a lot of Russian lit. We did a lot of criticism with that. Feminist criticism, you name it. I took all the criticism classes. And I was an art history minor. I know that's a double whammy. But I took a lot more art history and art critique than I did studio classes. So I have a little bit of critic in me, and I think that served me well in that, as in fine art, and is very similar to wine, is that you need to develop a connoisseurship, and you do that by studying what's come before you and categorizing things that you're seeing in art or tasting in wine and relating them to a bigger picture. And I think that served me well in tasting wines and critiquing wines. if I give you a wine blind, you have to smell it. You have to think, okay, what varietal is this? Where does this come from? What vintages? And you have to know a lot of different things to be able to come close to being able to do that. And that involves a lot of different experiences. You know, if you're trying to pin a 82 Bordeaux, you need to know what 82 Bordeaux tastes like. You can't just call that out of the blue. You have to know what things taste like, what the vintage was like.
You have to have a reference.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You can see look on a wall and you see a Picasso. Well, you know it's Picasso. Why do you know it's Picasso? Well, you know he had this period, and he used these colors, and this looks like him. And so I enjoyed that about wine. It was an easy transfer from my English background to winemaking. And I think that served me well. Maybe that someone from a different experience might not have.
So, Chris, for you, as a winemaker, what do you like to drink? What's your favorite? Do you have a favorite?
Oh, gosh. I love old California wines, and I buy them every chance I can get to when they've got good storage. And I love the wines of France. I think if I had to pick one country, I'd say France. I love the Southern Rhone from Chateau Neuf du Pape, Gigondas. I really love the Northern Rhone, Côte Rôtie and Hermitage. And of course, I love Bordeaux and Burgundy and Champagne. Burgundy's tough because it's so expensive, but I have a special affinity to the Northern Rhone. I love Syrah, and I got that at Colgan, where we made some Syrahs there. And I buy a little Syrah from Bennett Valley that I make for my own label as well. So I just, I love Syrah. It's wonderful.
So how many cases do you do here at Cliff Lady?
We do about 16,000 cases. We do two wines that you see mostly in the across the U.S. We make a Sauvignon Blanc from Napa Valley. Everything's from Napa Valley. We also make a Stag's Leap District Cabernet Sauvignon. Those are about 6,000 cases each. And then we make our flagship wine, Poetry, which is about 800 cases, very small. And then the rest are divided between some Cabernets and Right Bank blends that we make off the property here that don't get much distribution but are sold through our wine membership in the tasting room.
I think it's cool that winemakers do their own thing, have their own project, because I think if any, you're going to grow from that. So tell me about what you're doing on the side.
Yeah, it's just a tiny little project. I mean, my focus is Cliff Lady. We don't have any consultants here or outside help. So my focus is Cliff Lady, but I make a small amount of wine from some Cabernet on the Western Hills of St. Helena. And their vines were planted in 1970, these beautiful old vines that are just a little 1.5 acre vineyard. They produce very, very little fruit. And I've just happened to find this little gem up in the mountains and decided I had to have it. And I make about 100 cases a year. It's super tiny. I don't have a website. I don't have a mailing list. I just kind of sell to people that find out about it. Sure. And then I make a little bit of Syrah from the Bennett Valley of Sonoma. Not many people know the Bennett Valley, but it's a really, really cool area of Sonoma that's got a direct shot to the ocean, and it cools down and takes a long, long time for Syrah to ripen. And I really love those wines from the Northern Rhone, like I said before, Côte Rôtie and Hermitage. And each year it's got kind of leans more to one side. And sometimes it's Saint-Joseph, sometimes it's Hermitage, sometimes it's Côte Rôtie. And again, just 100 cases of that as well. So it's just tiny, and it's sold by hand. And
I was kind of waiting for you to get to that when you first said what you made. I was surprised you didn't say that right off the top, Syrah.
Yeah.
Bennett Valley is an AVA too, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly, yeah, it's the Bennett Valley of Sonoma.
These are both lovely. The Poetry is amazing.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'm
very, well done.
Very proud of that wine. It's I worked really extremely hard on it, and like I said, I feel like I'm catching this vineyard just as it's ready to take off and become even more and more amazing every year. And it's got a strength to it that isn't always given more praise in the Napa Valley. And sometimes we're a little more into things that taste great the first year they're released. It's not effusive in its floweriness. It's not overripe. It's not, but it, because of that rocky soil, it's got more of a mineral character, and it's initially it's a little bit more reserved. And so usually when we serve it to people, we'll decant it for 12 hours before we serve it. It just takes that much time to kind of open up and express itself. So it's because it's so powerful.
Do you find that with a lot of wines that you do tend to decant?
It depends. If it's a wine I don't know, I might just open it and pour it and see what it tastes like. If I feel like it's going to benefit from some decant time, if it feels really tight, I might just throw it in a decanter. And if I'm cooking at home, I'll usually use that as an excuse to open up a bottle of white wine while I'm grilling in the backyard. I can have a bottle of white and have enjoy the red in the evening. I think it's I'd take it a case-by-case basis on decant. I've seen people decant older wines too much, because they're afraid of getting some sediment in their glass. And I feel sometimes they've over-decant with older wines, and maybe you lose a little bit of strength and aromatics. You might lose that as you decant. But again, case-by-case basis, is that safe way to go?
I think sediment's a little badge of honor myself, but that's just my own opinion.
It's never killed anyone.
Never killed anyone. No,
it's not bad. It's not bad for you. It's just a little dirty. And you can actually drink around it if you're a skilled taster in your glass. You can move it by. And
this is why God gave us little fingers.
Exactly.
Pop it right out. The tasting room is located right here on Yountville Crossroad, which is where we are at the actual cellar. And so evidently then people can come by and they can do a very simple tasting without making an appointment, or they can do something that's in greater depth by appointment. Is that correct?
Exactly. We do have a tasting bar that people can come in if they've just heard about us, or someone's usually by recommendation. We don't have Yountville Crossroads, is not like Highway 29. It doesn't have a huge flow by where we get a lot of looky-loos. So we do have a tasting bar for people that do just come without an appointment. And then, but if you want to taste more formally, you want to sit down and enjoy the patio, we recommend you call ahead and get an appointment, because I think that's a little more fun to sit down and taste through all the wines and enjoy your time there.
Which is what it should be. There should be no rush. For our listeners to learn about you guys then online, how would they do that?
CliffLadyVineyards.com.
And if they did want to call to make an appointment?
You can call us at 707-754-4225.
Cool. Chris, I got to tell you, I've enjoyed this interview a lot. You're a real pleasure to talk to, because you just ooze this enthusiasm. It's very sincere, and that's really cool. So thanks for taking the time.
The pleasure's mine, Ray. Great to meet you.
Same here.
Learn more by visiting CliffLadyVineyards.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2015.